Hey guys, welcome back to the Hold Your Horses podcast and my YouTube channel. I really appreciate you being here. Today we've got a pretty cool episode. This is my second guest. So we've got Rhea here with us today. She's an equestrian, kind of on a cool polo journey. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. We're going to also talk about how she worked with some horses in Australia. And a bit of a discussion around dealing with injury and the rehabilitation process as well. So.
So my name is Rhea. I'm from Ottawa, Ontario in Canada. So here now, we just got a nice snowfall finally last night. So I got into horses probably, I was trying to count this morning, like maybe like 20, I've been into horses for like 25 years or something, okay. Something crazy. So it started out as a horse camp. I come from a non-horsey family, so I'm the only horse person. Started out as a horse camp. I convinced my mom when I was like 11 to like let me do this horse camp, and because I just like this high energy kid that was probably really annoying, she was like, okay, fine. So got into it, and then I was like, that was amazing, and I convinced her to let me do another week, and then pretty much that turned into lessons, and then just that was the beginning of the end for my mom, who had to pay for a lot of this growing up. So
I can relate to that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So did lessons for a while. And then I think growing up, I'm sure everyone who's listening can probably relate to this. We read the Thoroughbred books, the Saddle Club books, like all the horse books. And I learned about like competing and horse showing. And I really wanted to do that. So I was at this barn. So now it's called Wesley Clover. But it was called the Nepean Equestrian Park and the Nepean National Equestrian Park. It had all these names, but it's kind of like where they hold the big show jumping tournament every year. It's kind of like the central, like the biggest place in Ottawa that has like these big horse shows that's right by the highway. So everyone who's non-horse, you can see it. Anyway, that's where a lot of people in Ottawa started riding, especially if you come from a non-horse family. So that's where it all started. But they kind of more focus on lessons at the time, at least. And then I was like, I really want to compete and I want to do horse shows. So I moved on to another farm in the Ottawa area. That actually they're quite big now. They go down to Florida every year and they're quite fancy now, but I've left before that point. But I did, so I showed 1 year of like hunters, schooling hunter shows. It was fun to get into it, to like braid my horse and do the whole team thing, getting on the trailer at 4 a.m, but hunters really wasn't for me. What I really wanted to do was eventing. So after a year or two of showing with this farm, I moved to an eventing only farm and I showed there for maybe about 8 years or so.
Oh, wow.
Competed in eventing from like baby level all the way. I only actually ended up training up to training level. And the reason for that is just because the horse that I was riding at the time, I brought him up from like, he was just this auction horse to like, now he was jumping, he could jump like 3 feet.
Very cool.
But the time that I was riding there, my coach was like, you know, he's a great horse, but he doesn't have the mind to be a safe horse, and he'll just jump anything for you, which can be kind of dangerous once you get to like prelim and training. Mm-hmm. So we schooled at the training level, but only ended up competing at the pre-training level, and I chose the horse over the sport. So I was like, I love him too much.
Good for you. You gotta do sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just a good situation where I was in as well, just in terms of financially. It worked for me at the time.
Very cool.
So having said that, weirdly enough, now I guess we'll get into it a bit later, but I only just owned my first horse a year ago. So I've been in horses for like 25 years and kind of got through it by never owning a horse. Like I did it kind of like in this little dirt bag, kind of like barn monster way, where I had really good connections. I was competent with horses. You know, I kind of, I guess, proved myself in a way that I was riding other people's horses a lot. The horse that I evented with, I never actually owned him, but it worked out that the person who owned him needed somebody to get him exposed to things, who wasn't like she was a little bit of a nurse, she was older but sort of a nervous rider. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of got him going and showing and jumping and everything, and luckily enough I only had ever had to pay for my show fees, so that, I mean, I think awesome. Now that doesn't happen as much, like a free lease to me, I'd only learned this last year that a free lease isn't actually free. So I thought this whole time I was free leasing a horse. I'm like, this is great, you should free lease, but I only actually paid show fees, so
right
for me it was literally free.
Yeah, so I went, awesome way to get experience though, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, for sure.
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, I think that was kind of like the, I don't know if that's as much of a thing now, but just being a barn rat and hanging around and just kind of like made my way through making friends. And then people were like, oh, I have this horse that needs to be ridden. And then, getting on this, and he was like a big Clydesdale mix with a Morgan, like just not like a poor man's warm blood is what he
Okay,
was.
fair enough.
But he was great. He was great. So I
Awesome.
was kind of like, yeah, sorry.
No, that's okay. We've got a couple kids like at the barn where I've got my horses too, right? And I can't make it there as much. So, they help me out. And I think it is still pretty a common thing, which I think it's
Good.
great for kids to get out there and get that experience, right?
For sure, for sure. And that's kind of how that's how you make your connections as well. And then that will lead to another thing, to another thing. So I was really fortunate that my horse time in Ottawa when I was showing and everything turned out to be these really like people who gave me opportunities, basically. So I think it's important to that is like you don't always have to be the richest person. You don't have to import your horses from Germany. Like you can still get a lot of satisfaction, fulfillment from horses. But just by allowing people to give you opportunities, but also being open to learning, and just experiencing different things.
Totally. And with that being said, how you had a bit of an experience in Australia working with horses too. Like, how was that for you in terms of like, furthering you yourself like as an equestrian, if you kind of know what I mean there. I'm saying
Yeah, definitely.
that.
So
Word
I
is that
went
funny,
to,
but
yeah. So I flew to Australia basically on a one-way ticket. I finished my degree and went over there. Had no intention of doing horse anything because I'm like, I've shown here. I know what that's all about. I don't really want to go and do the same thing on another continent. So I'm like, I'm not gonna like focus on horses. That's not the reason why I'm going to Australia. So I kind of went with that mindset and then found out later on that you don't choose the horse life chooses you. So they followed me. And basically I was pretty much just like a backpacker. I was there for a sort of like a job, if you will. I was doing research work. I'd finished my degree in biology and then I was doing research work out in the outback actually. Realized that that really wasn't the path that I wanted to go and just wanted to kind of take some time off from everything and just travel and just be a backpacker. But of course, by that point, I'd been in Australia for like 6, 8 months. I didn't really have any money. I needed to work. And so through connections, I mean, I went on, they have Kijiji, we have Kijiji here, but in Australia, it's called Gumtree. It's the same thing. At the time that I was there, this was back in like 2011, 2012. And so I was like looking for jobs, and there's a lot of that's how backpackers at the time would find jobs. So applied for a job as a polo groom. New polo was just like running around on horses with sticks. I didn't really know what it was. And applied for a job. She took me in for the interview, but didn't hire me. And I think she kind of knew that she wasn't going to hire me because they'd already hired somebody. But she's like, but I do have somebody who needs a groom right now. You seem like a good fit. Let me just hook you up with them. So all in to say that I got a job through connections. Again, the horse world is very much connected, as you will. And got a job with a polo groom who just needed a groom. And he was really open to like he knew I didn't know anything about polo, knew I came from the show world where we like braided our horses' manes and put Shoshin on them and it was very fancy. And so he was really patient with me and just teaching me how the world of polo worked and knew that I had the skills to take care of these 9 horses, but didn't necessarily have this polo background, which is totally fine because a groom's job isn't necessarily, you don't have to be a polo player. So that really pushed me into thinking like, wow, like we can really push horses a lot further than what I was used to. And we can really trust them with a lot more, like having nine, like I would ride. So when I would warm up the horses, when we would do, I would do sets twice a day. So you just basically go around a track. It's like doing all of your cardio work. I'd ride one horse and I'd have 2 horses on one side and like 2 horses on the other side. So I'd be schooling, like working 5 horses at once, 4 to 5 horses, which is totally normal. And these horses are so used to being worked together that like, and as a groom, like you don't have a lot of time to just do one horse at a time, one to the paddock, back to the barn. I had 9 of them and I only had so many hours in a day. So they were also used to being led like 5 at a time, throw them all in the field, gates wide open. They'll all stand there while I take their halters off. And then the whole, yeah, so it really taught me a lot about how I guess like how forgiving horses are, but also how trusting they are of us. And just these guys were just so they knew their job, there was no,
The
they didn't fool
routine.
around, they were just very much like, okay, this is our job. But at the same time, it wasn't like they weren't like robots, they were kind of like, this is our job, but I think what really works with polo horses is that they're always together. So they kind of have their little herd, and this is kind of like what we do every day. So very much opposed to the show world, not in a bad way, but just opposite to the show world, where it's like one horse, one rider, yeah. You boot them to their eyeballs. It's one at a time. In polo, it's like, we don't have time to work one horse at a time. So that really taught me a lot about just working with horses in a different way. Mm-hmm. And then just as a little side note, when my season ended with polo, I got another job through my polo, the player that I worked with, where I worked essentially as a cowgirl. So in the outback, like chasing cows, I'd never done any kind of like Western anything, but we used like rode in Australian saddles, and it was actually legitimately where we had to go and get cattle out in the bush and bring them back because wow. to like tag them and everything. And that was where I really learned like, wow, we the horses are not made of glass. Oh my gosh. Like you can go down banks and you can mm-hmm. push things. And these horses were so brave, but again, they were all just, this was part of their daily, this was part of their job. Mm-hmm. So in Australia, having not done anything show related, I didn't do eventing. I didn't do any jumpers. I did nothing that I did here, really taught me a whole lot about horses and expanded my whole view and my perspective, on just being a horse person and kind of like, I guess, progressed myself as an equestrian. And I got new skills, gained new understanding for other disciplines and other worlds and other ways to live with horses. So it was definitely a huge, like an incredible experience that I think made me a better and a like a better equestrian in the end.
That's really cool. And yeah, like that totally would, all of those experiences, especially like the outback situation, like wow, mm-hmm. you get a feel for like how capable horses are and how we yes. like baby them so much sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But was that your first introduction like experience with polo then in Australia?
It was, yeah. Okay. So and, the only other yeah. experience I had prior to that was like reading it in books briefly. Like every horse book talks about every horse sport, and there'll be like three sentences on polo.
That's
polo,
yeah.
They run fast, you hit a ball with a mallet and you score goals. And like, that's it, right? This part of the world, especially this part of the province, actually, we don't really have a lot of polo. As yeah. I've gotten a bit more, yes, there is actually polo in Montreal, there's polo big in Calgary, but overall, like hunter jumpers is kind of like the top. That's what everybody does in the English world, at least. Yeah. And then polo kind of falls between this. Is it English? Is it Western? I don't know. Whatever it is, it's just not really a Canadian thing.
Yeah, totally. No, so, it is rare. Yeah. That's why I was surprised when I saw the article. And I thought it was really, really cool. So it intrigued me right away. It's mm-hmm. so neat that like just the amount of different things we can do with our horses.
Sure.
So with that in mind, talking about kind of your partner in crime here for polo. So it's Brava, right?
Brava, yeah. Brava.
So tell us a bit about Brava. When did you get him?
So I got him just about a year ago. So September 2021 mm-hmm. Is when I officially like got signed the paper and got him as my own, my first cool. horse ever. Awesome. So some like the just a because he's a polo horse as well, sort of like a tradition with polo horses, one of the many traditions is we will name them with like a Spanish name. So okay. typically you'll find in polo there's either English polo or like Spanish polo, which typically comes from not Spanish but like South American polo, so Argentinian. So you have like your British side polo and then your Argentinian polo, and sometimes people follow one or one stream or both or what have you. But anyhow, his name is Spanish name Brava for brave, and he lives up to that name for sure.
That was really neat. How so you've had him about a year then, you said?
Just about a year. Yeah.
Okay. And then moving forward, talking about Brava a little bit more. So he experienced an injury. It was in the right hind, right? Like a severe yeah. injury, and then a soft tissue damage on the left as well.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So how did that happen? You want to, if you could give us a rundown of that injury.
Yeah. So he actually, sadly, got caught in the electric fencing at the barn he was at before. So it was kind of an injury that nobody could really predict or prevent in a sense. It's one of those freak accidents that happens to horses. And basically I just got a phone call from the barn owner. I was going to work and they called me and was like, what are you doing? You need to come here right now. Oh. So nobody really knew how it happened. They just found him on the ground basically. And the vet came out and he had like a huge, like deep cut to the right hind, like right around the stifle, like just below the stifle actually. And then on the left side, there was just, again, like he must've had both legs caught in it at some point and was just totally exhausted. Like he was clearly
panic, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And he was kind of like the protector of the herd. He was like, that was his role. So he was like, he had a lot of fight in him, but he was like fighting and fighting and fighting. And when he was found, he was just completely exhausted. So we don't really know how long he was struggling for. Right. Because it was like everybody was at work and just found him there. So
yeah, you can't be there all the time, right? Like
exactly. Yeah. So that was kind of like he was taken into the barn, and pretty much that came like within a few hours from when it happened to like being seen. Thankfully, it all happened like within a couple of hours.
Yeah. How long have you had him when that happened?
Oh my gosh! Like I think I got in September, October, November, December, January. So 6 months.
Okay.
And I hadn't even had my first vet appointment with him.
That's pretty devastating.
So it was like my first 6 months of owning a horse, first 6 months of horse ownership. And I was like, do I get the insurance or not? Like,
brutal.
Some
are so accident prone. Like,
oh yeah.
They can be brutal. And injuries, like they can be so devastating, like not obviously for the horse, but for like the rider too, right? Like we've got goals and a lot of us have goals in mind, like when we're working with our horses, and something like that can really affect, you know, your progress. So how did that like affect your goals, like your personal goals at the time?
Mm-hmm. So of course, prior to the injury, I was kind of like, oh, finally, like I have my own polo pony. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be able to kind of start the season strong, start early. We'll get ready and it's going to be awesome. And I'd actually had plans to like, that I was going to like how I was going to, which club I was going to join, and kind of like, cause there's, so in polo, there's different, I guess, like levels of play in a sense. So you have your big games are Saturday, Sunday, and then typically clubs will have green chuckers. So a chucker is like the period that you play, like the, like, you know, hockey periods, like three periods, it's kind of the same thing, chuckers.
Okay.
So a lot of clubs will hold like their big games, which are Saturday, Sundays, and then green chuckers, which are for like newer players or younger, like newer horses. And the game, like they don't go with all the rules. It's more chill. It's like slower pace is meant for learning.
Okay.
So I had all these plans to like do the green chuckers and go to all these clinics. And it was going to be awesome. My own pony, my own horse, like finally for the first time. So as soon as this happened, immediately those I wouldn't say they went down the drain, but they just kind of went on a back burner. There was no longer a priority. So at this point in time, I was kind of like, okay, so first and foremost, we don't even know what's going to come of this. Like Brava's comfort and his like pain level is going to be the most important thing. We have to first get him in order, make sure that he's comfortable, that everything is fair for him. So nothing was off the table at this point. That first weekend happened, of course, on a rainy Friday night. And nothing was off the table. We were just basically going to wait till Monday to see like, okay, how's he feeling?
Yeah.
And so I was kind of like, I just have to basically like let him in a sense tell me what he feels like doing and what he's capable of doing. So it just went, I just had to watch him and make sure that his pain level was okay. And of course, by judging that through a horse, like you look into their eyes, essentially. It sounds really kooky, but you just, you know, you can tell kind of almost how they're feeling. But is he eating? Is he drinking? Is he getting up? Is he pooping? And he did all of those things. So awesome. Yeah. So it was kind of like, exactly, from the Friday to the Monday, it was like, okay, so it might not be actually like a sad ending in a couple of days. It's going to be like, maybe we can actually progress through this, whether or not he's going to be rideable or whatever. Like then our goals changed. I think that was the key, was like the goals changed as he got better and as he progressed. So the first and foremost goal was like his comfort, what's fair to him, his well-being, his quality of life. And then once that was kind of established, it was like, okay, well, is he going to be rideable, or is it going to be, okay, we're going to get him to a point where he'll retire to like a horse farm and then just be belligerent on like a retirement horse farm where he'd like
cause
other horses. or is he going to be able to be rideable to some degree? So that was kind of like the next step in the next few weeks where I was going to go with that and what was going to happen from that point forward. So in terms of like, okay, I really want to play a game this summer, that wasn't really going to be a goal with him. I mean, there's tons of other horses that I could play polo on, which in the end, that's what ended up happening. So I did play polo.
Oh, perfect.
But for him, it was more his health and well-being. That was the primary goal.
Yeah. And it's not just in terms of like the injury, but that the mental part of like when a horse struggles for that long, I've heard some terrible stories of, you know, just mentally they, you know, can't deal with it and they end up, you know, having to be euthanized or whatever. And it's not even because of the injury necessarily. So they're such sensitive animals. So I'm glad he came out of that okay. That's really, really good. And I know you kind of talked a little bit about like, you just kind of felt like he kind of spoke to you when he was ready to get back to work. So that was kind of like my next question. How long was the time period from when he went on stall rest to when you had like your first ride?
So I think probably it must have been about maybe 2 months. I don't exactly remember the dates, but he was on stall rest for officially 5 weeks.
Okay.
And then we went from like just straight up stall rest to kind of like walking due to doing 10 minute walks, like hand walks up and down the laneway. Mm-hmm. So probably around maybe the 6 week point or so, 6-8 weeks, the vet pretty much signed off and was like, you know what, like you should just get on him because I think he's just gonna get more and more. If this was also spring comes and then they get all hyper and they're all crazy with the new grass and stuff. So the vet was like, you know what, it's probably safer if you get on him because I don't want him being like out of control in hand. So why don't you just get on him? You'll have more control and then just start walking him. So I would say probably maybe 6-8 weeks is when I started riding him again.
Yeah.
And just at the walk, and you know, he could I would just walk him in the arena alone and, you know, ask him to move forward, and he'd start, like, I'd have to hold him back just because he wanted to go. Yeah, so I was like, okay, so you
stall
are
horses and easy for some horses.
yeah and surprisingly he was actually like in the stall when he had a buddy in. He was actually quite good. He loved the stall world. He loved the barn world. Like he loved being an indoor horse. He's actually an outdoor horse, but I think he just liked, it was nice to like not be wet for a little while and
be pampered for a little bit.
Yeah. Not have to fight over it with anybody and just walk everything from like the window. So like he had to head out the window. So I think that he is an off the track thoroughbred. So there was a time where he was stalled more like more regularly. And I think he was like, oh yeah,
I remember this. Awesome. Well, that's good. Good. Cause that can be stressful for some horses. So he handled that well. So you're a human massage therapist, right? And a nurse, right? Yes. So how did like that kind of background, did that help you in any way kind of support Rava and yourself like through the recovery process there?
Yeah, definitely. So weirdly enough, so in the end, thankfully nothing was broken after like a million x-rays, nothing had to be broken. And that pretty much concluded it must be some kind of mild stifle injury that might have been exacerbated by the fact that it was an electric fence. So it was probably just he had a lot going on and a lot of more soft tissue, a lot of swelling, but thankfully none of the major joints or like even his ligaments were pretty much, for the most part, we can just assume that everything turned out to either heal perfectly or was okay because he just progressed and didn't kind of never, thankfully never took like a step back. So weirdly enough, a year or two prior, I actually injured my own ACL snowboarding and that did the other one skateboarding. So in horses, like the stifle is the knee joint and they have the same kind of joints that we do. So I actually rehabbed myself. And so I'm like, okay, I know how to do it. I know the things that can happen. So like, I just have to modify it to accommodate a horse. So once the vet signed off, I pretty much was spearheaded the whole rehab process based on my own knowledge and experience of doing it to myself. So a lot of it was just, of course, I had to learn all about the stifled joint and kind of different. I did a lot of reading online and not too much to scare myself and not to, you know, Dr. Google myself, but just kind of add some horse knowledge to the knowledge that I already had. So a lot of that when I was rehabbing myself, it was a lot of supportive care of working the muscles kind of around the knee and using a lot of, I rolled my knee a lot, like not rolled it, but just with the foam rollers. And did a lot of self-massage, which really made a huge difference. So when I was getting Brava better, it was the same thing. So when I started walking him, I would do a lot of really light lateral work. So working I didn't full on leg yield, but doing just like working kind of into the I don't even remember the terms anymore because I'm so far removed from the English world.
That's okay.
But you know, I would do a lot of just kind of like making sure to work both sides of his body, big circles, loops, like big serpentines, nothing stressful, but that he had to use one side more than the other. And I like to think that actually really helped him a lot, even like doing like really slow transitions once we started trotting. Things I had to bring it down to like a physio and kind of like massage. for my horse, essentially. So doing a lot of these rehab exercises, which we do in humans as well. So that really, like, taking time to do that, because I know how long it took me to get to get pretty much 100% better. I had to do the same thing. I was kind of like, okay, our goals aren't going to be huge. It's just going to be, okay, we're going to do, you know, 2 serpentines after like 10 minutes of walk, and that's going to be it. So it was a lot of that. Was a lot of just taking it slow and having the goals of just him being sound, comfortable, and happy at the end of our session. So
awesome. The end of our rides. Yeah, that's good. It can take so long. Like, I think people underestimate how long it can actually take to heal, like just tissue damage and stuff like that. So, but yeah, we'll wrap up here with a last question. So kind of moving forward with you, we're hitting the end of 2022. So what are your plans for 2023? Anything crazy?
Yeah, definitely. So I think Brava is pretty much like, I'm giving him the winter for the most part off. A lot of the polo people here, we tend to just take like the winter a lot more easy. Not everybody, but at least in this area, we pretty much give the horses they have the whole winter off to just recoup and eat and just be horses. So we'll start up our training in the spring. And last year I rode in a couple of women's tournaments, which was just so much fun. And tournaments are literally like the funnest thing in polo. So I definitely want to try to organize playing Brava actually in the tournament this year. So we have a local tournament in Ottawa, which we'll probably host again. So definitely want to have, I rode a friend's horses last time. It was kind of like this last minute, and that's kind of what got me into it. Like, getting to play my first big game was, she had to drop out last minute, and like 2 days before the tournament, she's like, you need to ride my horses. So that worked out really well, but now I'll have my own horse to ride. So I definitely want to aim for that, to ride him in the women's tournament. And then there was a big women's invitational tournament in Toronto, through the Toronto Polo Club and through De Rosa Polo Club. Shout outs.
Yeah, no worries. Some links below, whatever.
Yeah. But that was the tournament that I played in August. And I definitely want to try to convince some of the girls from here to go up. We can go up together maybe, and then play him in that tournament for sure. So want to have a couple of tournaments to have on my own horse for the first time, I guess. And then just kind of end the season strong again. So yeah, that's
very
exciting. Whereas riding them in tournaments.
Awesome. Well, I hope you, take some videos and post lots of stuff online.
For sure.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Have a look. It's pretty exciting. Polo. So, like you said, it's not super common in here. So I'm like really excited to kind of like see what you and Brava do. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. And so what's your business name for your massage therapy?
Yeah, so my business is called OttawaMobileRMT.com.
Okay, perfect. We'll post your links below too.
Sure, amazing.
Thanks so much for watching, guys. If you want to read more up on this topic, you can check out the article posted below on pololady.com. I wanted to thank Rhea and you guys, of course, for watching. I think the moral of the story here is you just never know what's going to happen, especially working with horses. So you just have to have some patience, you know, understanding, a little bit of empathy, which clearly Rhea has. So you just got to take things one day at a time and one ride at a time sometimes as well. So thanks so much for listening, guys. We'll see you next time.